Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Mari Forth.
I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from unceded Gadigal land. And this is Crime Scene, the true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. Mari, what are we talking about today?
Well, let's open today's file. We watched Our Father, which it's a documentary. Yeah, it's the documentary, technically, right?
Technically, yeah.
which looks at a case of a fertility doctor, Dr. Donald Klein, who used his own sperm without the patient's knowledge or consent.
Yeesh.
Yeah, who ended up fathering 96 children. One of those children was named Jacoba Ballard, and she starts to track down her half-siblings to uncover his crimes. It is a four-part series. It is available on Netflix in both Australia and the U.S. I just want to say, the only reason why I said it's like it's a documentary, but this one doesn't feel like it. The cinematography behind it is like so good, and it's a Blumhouse production, which if we have any horror fans out there, I love Blumhouse productions, and you could feel it.
We are pretty staunchly anti-reenactment on this podcast, mm-hmm. but we may have to have a caveat for this particular property, I think. And so it's directed by Lucy Jordan, whose previous work includes the TLC three-part series Taken at Birth from 2019. And we'll touch on that a little bit later because it does have connections into this property.
And, of course, we couldn't do this alone.
No.
We have a pop culture enthusiast, the co-host of the Married at First Sight podcast, my brother from another mother, Mr. Jason Reed. Jason, welcome to Crime Scene.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. And the first thing I will say, what do y'all have me watching? This was some mess. I think I said bro like five times during this whole documentary. It's a wacky people in here, and like it kept turning. Like Mari said, this is a Blumhouse production. It was one of the first things I noticed. Yes. I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Didn't know they were in the documentary space.
Exactly.
You definitely had some like real like horror elements, like real like the way things were staged and like sound cues. So I, from that moment, I was like, oh, this is going to be something different. It's going to be something unique. And it was.
Yeah.
It took some twists and turns.
When we met in New York, I said to you, oh, you're Neil Armstrong. You're our first man. And yes. So welcome to the show about sperm.
I'm not sure if like that's an honor for this particular documentary. Like, I feel like even I came away with this. Like, men are trash. Like, like, so
you know, defend your gender. Defend your gender. That's why you're here. I don't know if I can
after this. I mean, most of the men on this documentary were pretty horrible. So yeah, I don't know if that's a proud thing that I want to wear today or what, but I am honored that you would have me as the first man on your podcast. It is an honor that I take with you know, with a big grain of salt there. Like, I'm happy about it, but I'm like,
yes,
not doing nothing proud.
I was like, this is, we got to do our father. I was like, okay, the perfect man who can do this. I was like, the resident dad, the other person who knows what I'm going through. I was like, we have to have Jason on. Jason, can you tell us, are you like a true crime? Like, are you a fan of true crime? Do you prefer the genre? What's your true crime origin story?
I mean, to be honest, I don't really delve that deep into it normally. You know, this, I think like last true crime thing I saw, like, don't kill me for this, was probably like, Tiger King, but like, like, and you know, I know that there's been a deluge of shows and movies that have come out recently about it, but I just haven't gotten on the train yet. You guys got me last week with the painter, with the painter documentary. I got to check that out still, but I listened to the podcast and it seemed like very interesting. It's not that I don't like true crime, it's just I have so many other things in my head that I just don't have room for it. I watch 2 hours of Married at First Sight every week. I cannot do anything else, it seems, because that is such a Herculean task, which you both know. So yeah, as soon as I have time for it, we get a small break in between Married at First Sight seasons. I will be diving in, certainly for the shows that you guys have covered already. But yeah, like anything true crime I'll get sucked into like a Dateline case.
Oh yes.
I'll be perusing channels like, oh, this is interesting. But that's pretty much the depth of my knowledge.
Yeah. And that's great. Like, we love having people with differing perspectives. And honestly, that's what we're here pushing the boundaries of true crime, if you will, because it's like, is this technically a true crime property?
Yeah, I mean, Mari, you really wanted to cover this. What was it that attracted you, or what was it that piqued your interest when you saw that this was coming up?
Because when I saw like the trailer for this, I was like, oh my gosh, another one? This is not the only fertility doctor who has done something to this effect. And the most fascinating thing is, it's like the biggest question is this a crime? Like, for me, it definitely is, but to some, in some states, there are not laws against what he did, and we'll talk about it as we go through. But even with this doctor, Dr. Klein in Indiana, at the time he was doing what he was doing, there were technically no laws against what he was doing. So that's what I loved about this, was like talking about how the victims are impacted, because this one was very like victim oriented, and then like some people are like, well, were they victims? I think so. Again, you know. Yeah, like big time, right?
And there are laws now because of him and because of his victims. There are now laws on the books.
Exactly.
We'll come to that later. But yes, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I think, like, I can't speak for my entire gender, as we're requiring Jason to speak for his, but I can't imagine a woman not recoiling at the assault, or, you know, battery with a bodily waste is actually on the books in a lot of jurisdictions, but even that, you know, was not able to be used. So just the intimacy and the violation of what he did, and beyond that, and several of them mention it, and it's something I hadn't thought of, because, look, we will get into it, so spoilers from here on, because the woman was ready in the stirrups and he went into the next room and masturbated into the cup and then brought it back, or into the pipette, or however it's prepared, that he returned to them in a state of, you know, post-arousal or euphoria. So certainly, although he says it wasn't sexual, how not?
The narration by the woman describing that in at that moment in the documentary, like, I would challenge anyone to hear that and not feel for that person. Like, you may come into this like, what's the big deal? Like, you know, it was insemination. She didn't know who the father was anyway. But the point is, like, when you hear her account like that, and to hear her discuss And when she thinks about it, like, you have to feel for these people. You have to realize that this was a wrong done to these people.
Yeah, well, in some cases, they thought it was the unnamed medical student, no more than three specimens. But some of them thought it was their husbands.
Right. And yeah. That's one of the most devious, one of the most devious things that this has brought to light. This is one of the most devious. Like, when you're telling me that, okay, having a random person is one thing, but then you're telling me that my husband is the one that is providing a sample, that this is going to be my husband's baby, but then just to totally switch it up on me, like, for it to be your baby is
even
crazy.
It's definitely even worse. So let's just set the scene here. Let's go with the opening. I thought, again, you could definitely feel the production value just so high here. The opening was just so sinister.
Can I say something real quick?
Please, yes.
Okay. I'm watching this, right? I'm like, okay, this is a story about this subject, right? I'm like, it can't be like that graphic or gratuitous. So I turn it on while my 13-year-old daughter is in the room. And for this to be the first image that we see, which is, the actor reenacting the doctor in his office masturbating, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, turn this off. I'll just wait for you to go to bed and I'll watch the rest. Never mind. Exactly. That was quite a jump scare for me. We're talking about the horror aspect of this. I was like, oh, okay, let me turn it off real quick. As he's just like writhing in his chair, I'm like, is that what I think it is? I was like, that's what that is. Let me turn this off.
I mean, unlike the Pentaveret, you don't actually see the pain, but you are fully aware of what he's doing. And then for me, the absolute kicker was the hand coming out with the little cup of milky substance and putting it on the desk. And I was like, oh, I know. Oh, here we are.
They had the tie thrown over the shoulder.
Oh, yes,
everything. I was like,
get the image out of my head, Mark. Stop doing that.
We see him from behind in his office chair, and it gives it to you. And lest anyone listening thinks, oh, well, that's a bit graphic, that's going a bit far, what it does is it tells you this is what was happening as a woman was vulnerably naked from the waist down in stirrups next door, emotionally invested in what the procedure was she was about to go through, very much wanting a baby. And we hear from the fantastic women who talk about this happening to them. I mean, how brave is that?
Yeah.
But they talk about it. We'll get to it. They talk about their desire for a baby. Yeah, so
exactly.
Graphic and horror, though, this image is, I don't think it was too much, because it says this is what he was doing.
It set the table like pretty, pretty perfectly. And so we start with sibling number one, Jacoba, like we said at the top. Jacoba had always looked for family. In a sense, she felt like she needed family. Her mom and her dad, they couldn't have kids. So they went to Dr. Klein, who told her mom, who's here too, her mom, is in the documentary. I think I grabbed her name a little bit later, but
I believe it's
Debbie. There, thank you so much, Jason. Her mom, yes. Debbie, also participated in this, but they were told that they couldn't have kids. So when Debbie went to Dr. Klein, she was told you'll be inseminated with a medical resident sperm, and supposedly that sample will not be used more than three times. And Jacoba was like, well, at least that means I might have like two or three half siblings out there. So she starts like looking for them. And this is what like really starts the avalanche of everything. And it kind of also talks about how like back in the, because this was like in the 80s, when Dr. Klein was doing this, back then it was not like it was now. This is where we get the background, because it's not like now where there's samples, there's frozen samples now. There's a database and all that. Back then they had a notebook, and then most of the donors were coming from medical resident students that were at the hospital across the street, and they could only do fresh samples. This is very important. It's not like today where they could viably freeze the sperm. They had to use fresh samples. But the women were still consenting to have another person's sperm well, this, sorry, we're still talking about Debbie. Debbie consented to having somebody else's sperm instead of her husband's, because her husband was the one who was infertile.
There's an extraordinary reenactment of, and with his Dr. Klein's nurse, who we also have with us, talks about going across the street to collect the medical residents' samples, and because it had to be fresh and because it had to be a certain temperature, she would tuck the sample safely in its little jar into her bra.
I had a question about a little bit. I said, did anybody ask you to do that? Especially, it's a weird thing you were doing. Like, it was right across the street. Well, you could have held it in your hand to keep it warm.
But you might have dropped it. I liked this nurse
this whole time. I was like, I was like, are you in on a cavalier about this? I feel like you knew what was happening. I feel like you were an accomplice.
She and the business partner claim they knew nothing.
Yes.
I find that a little hard to believe.
Yeah, they had to keep it at body temperature, like for the sperm to stay viable. Mari,
it was right across the street. Okay, yeah. she could have held it in her hand. She could like, but she decided to put it in her bra. She was like, oh, I'm putting this in my bra. Like, I feel like that's a weird thing she had. I don't want to kick shame anybody, but I feel like that was some weird stuff that she was doing there. Nobody asked her to do that.
Nobody asked you to do that. Yeah.
I put it in my boob. Oh, okay. Thanks.
Sure.
It was a 2-minute walk across the street. I think we could have been okay, but thanks.
In the absence of pockets, and here's a PSA to people who make women's clothing, please put pockets in the clothing.
Please.
We don't get pockets. Or you get a pair of trousers, you're looking at a pair of jeans, you go, oh, this is great. Pockets. No, they're fake pockets.
I looked at my wife the other day. She had me hold on. I was like, you got pockets right there? She's like, nope, these are not pockets. I was like,
these are not pockets.
Get out of here.
So if you are a person who wears a bra, you will often find it a very handy place to stash a key, a credit card, various other illicit substances in drugs, in clubs in the old days. Not that I would ever have done that. But it is, you think it's a little kinky. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about it as being actually practical.
Yeah.
I'm not buying that.
We're not going to convince her at all.
She dropped it. Okay. All right.
What, she dropped it? Okay. All right. Well, I mean, you know what? Honestly, if she dropped it, she could turn around and be like, listen, I know you probably need about 10 or 15 minutes. But
They're young men.
Yeah, go right back at it.
Cigarettes. Yeah.
Did you guys find it interesting that if they were getting them from medical students and wasn't like something that probably is more commonplace nowadays, where people would just come to a sperm bank and donate of their own free will for maybe a monetary payment?
So I'll get into it a little later, but I watched another documentary called Baby God, and apparently back in the day, that was just how they did it. It was kind of like, I think it was kind of like a superiority thing. It's like, okay, we have medical residents. The medical residents, they normally have like a whole bunch of them. Back in that day, it was mostly men, and they mostly lived in the hospital, from what I understand. Like, most residents kind of just stayed in the hospital or around the hospital. So I think it sounded like they still did some sort of screening, like what's your family history and all that for them. But mostly it was those medical residents that they went to, because again, this was the era of fresh samples. So they needed fresh samples. So they needed people there. And again, this is kind of like back in the day, you know, using donor sperm was not always the goal. The goal was if two people were infertile, you would try to use the husband's sperm. That was supposed to be the number one. And it's like, okay, if that doesn't work, then we have to fall back to the donor. So, yes, you know what I'm saying?
It might be low motility for the husband's sperm.
Exactly.
They might be present, but they're just a little bit lazy. They're not modal.
Exactly.
So if you help them through the
canal,
through the cervix, you know, they're just not vigorous enough to get through the cervix, but they're perfectly viable once you get them past that wonderful barrier.
So it's not like today where there's so many different options as to why people might want to use sperm donors, like, you know, women being able to provide as single moms and stuff like that. So it was just a different time and it wasn't, it was new as well. Cause even in this documentary, they talked about, how Dr. Klein and his partner, they were the leaders in like also like laser tubal repair, like kind of like reverse tube tying and stuff like that. So this was all very cutting edge. And like I said, when I watched that other documentary, it really sounded like everything was kind of like the wild, wild west back in those early days, because they also pointed out that at this point, remember, this is the 80s. So there's no DNA testing right now. So they don't know that around the corner, we will be able to do DNA testing and we will be able to break it down. So he's just like, I'm going to inseminate these women. They'll never know.
I just imagine like Klein sitting like in a recliner, like watching TV one day, and he sees this ad for 23andMe. He's like, oh, shit. Right? Son of a bitch. Yes. This is going to be a problem.
Because as we'll see later, he says the world doesn't need to know. I mean, how chilling is that? Yes, he must have seen that ad and realized that the mills of God grind slow, but they grind exceeding small, Dr. Klein. Everything comes to light.
We talked about Jacoba here, and from what I know of Jacoba from this document, I don't know anything else about Jacoba, but I mean, Jacoba 2024, as far as I'm concerned.
Talk about it, right?
She is a hero. She's here. Awesome. She is dogged in her pursuit. She did not stop when a lot of us probably would have stopped. And it's like, and when you come across a roadblock, you're like, oh, well, I guess I won't know. But like, and I did find it interesting. She's like, I found, what was it, 8 siblings when I did the 23. I mean, I think I probably would have thought like maybe this person that donated the sperm also went on to have a family of their own, and maybe they have kids that did this. But I guess that would be like really coincidental that all 8 of those kids, like 3 from the, you know, anonymous donor and 5 others, would be in this database, especially this early in the process for a 23andMe type of thing. So yeah, I guess it does make sense. Like, that's a awfully high number for so early in this process.
Right. I mean, she only got, as you say, there were 8 of them, so she only got 7 hits. The later kids are getting 80.
Yeah. You know, So let's talk about the Talking Heads a little bit more. So, of course, Jacoba is, of course, like we said, is like the hero of the story. She's the main person. She's kind of the person who's driving the vehicle for the story. However, we did hear from Diana and Liz. These were 2 patients of Dr. Klein. They're the ones who are first introduced to us. And I really like them because they stay with the whole documentary. We eventually meet their kids and then we hear their kids' point of view. But Diana was the one who her husband thought that they were implanting his sperm. Liz was okay with a random donor, but Liz was the one who during the recreations she was the one who had the really, really powerful story, talking about how she went to Dr. Klein's office. She would go get undressed, get in the stirrups, not knowing that he would go a half a hallway down. She talked about how every time she was there, like, nobody was in the office but her and him, which I was like,
that's crazy. So insidious.
Yeah. And then another Blue House production. So he would go into his office.
I did it on purpose.
Yeah. I love it. He would go into his office. He would masturbate. And then directly after masturbating, he would come in with the cup and inseminate her. And she was saying, like, it made her feel sick knowing that he was still on that euphoric high while he was inseminating her. And she literally said here, she said, when I found this out, I felt like I had been raped 15 times and didn't know it. Like the between Diana and Liz, they really start out this this documentary on the human level of the women. And, you know, these people are giving their stories, and it's just incredible. Like, it was so incredible. And it was the only way that you could tell this story, because like Jason had said, like, you come into it, you're like, oh, well, you know, what's the problem? And then it's like, no, listen to, it's the lack of consent. It's like the lack of knowledge of that what you're being told is not what's happening. And I just felt for them so much. And I think they did a great job of humanizing what was going on, like the actual women who were inseminated. Like, I think their story is front and center, and then we go through like the siblings and stuff like that. But I thought it was really important to talk to the two two of the women who were actual patients. And we talked to more of them down the line, but I thought this was a great opening. What do we think about the different talking heads and the real people using the real recreations? Jason?
Sorry.
Well, like you said, it was, you know, just a bundle of sympathy for the actual patients. And then you have, you know, you have the, like I said, the nurse who I didn't feel like, I felt it was just like, you hit on this, like, you know something. And the partner who was very like casual about it up to a point. And then we get to later in the documentary where he, you know, he does comments on how, you know, he didn't know who Klein really was. And, you know, we get this crazy twist with two of the talking heads that we meet, Mark and
the Farbers.
Yeah, that's
his colleagues. They're introduced as his colleagues.
Yeah,
which we'll talk about later. That threw me. Yeah, the talking heads were very powerful. Were very informative, powerful, and you really felt for them as they were telling the story.
Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Anything? Yeah, I was going to bring up the Farbers. That's the one for me because it's a husband and wife and they're both professional people. She talks about him, Dr. Klein, treating her in a very patronizing fashion and knowing more about her field than she does. And we feel that they're there as a sort of character witness in a way, and then we find out
his betrayal
of them is extraordinary. Again, thought it was her husband's sperm, as did her husband, and he's virtually unable to speak during the interviews. I think this has been a blow to him that I don't know if he's recovered from.
Right. I thought it was interesting that we didn't meet a lot of the fathers involved in this. What did y'all think of that? Like, we saw a lot of the mothers, but not really a lot of the fathers' point of views here.
Yeah, very. So Diana is Julie's mom, right? And Julie. And Diana thought that it was Diana's husband's, Julie was Diana's husband. And we get a quote from Diana saying that when her husband found out that Julie wasn't his, that Dr. Klein took everything away from him. He took everything and he hated Dr. Klein. So I don't know if it's indicative of the fathers weren't present or if it was just like the director herself. The director is a woman. And I think it is important that we get mostly the women's point of views on this. So that could be it. But, you know, there were some husbands present and there's some that weren't. So also it may be just they didn't want to talk about it because they probably get really pissed off. Like we were talking about that to me, that's one of the biggest violations of this. Like it doesn't, you know, that doesn't, negate what Liz went through or anything like that. Like people who consented to an anonymous donor, that doesn't take away from them. But you have to feel some type of way if you and your husband go to a fertility clinic. If you're having problems doing it naturally, you can still have your husband's sperm inseminate you. And they would go there with their husband's providing samples. Their husbands would provide their samples and he would be like, nah, and just
toss it over his shoulder into the garbage. Like that's what I'm thinking. Like they walk into his office with this like sperm, like, here you go, doc, we're ready. And he's like, oh, that's great. And then as he turned that back, he just tosses it in the trash. Like,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, as a as a father, it's just like the like rage I would feel once I found something like that out. I would have liked to see that perspective. I think the amount of perspective you get from the women here is great. I would have liked a kind of like, maybe they had the fathers on screen, but they were like, okay, we can't use any of what he said because he ran to a rage. We need somebody a little more calm here. Like, maybe that's it. But yeah, I like you said, Mar, I definitely appreciate the mothers who went through the most, who are the most violated in this process. Mm-hmm. Hearing their perspective is very important. And I am glad that we got the perspective, but I wish I could have seen a little more of the other side of the coin the parental figures here.
Yeah, I mean, we get the women speaking about their husbands, and then we get Mr. Farber, who is virtually can't say anything.
Through most of the thing, I thought he was just like Klein's buddy at some point.
I know.
And then it's like, oh, this is quite a turn.
So, I mean, I think you're right, because for fathers of children with donated sperm, they have given that consent. They did, certainly didn't consent to act as a parental figure for Klein's many, many children, but they have made a decision, and this is their child, and we hear this, you know, over and over again from both the families who think it was a donated sperm and from the families who think it was the husband's sperm. Of course, these children are their children. You know, right. They raised them. But I think you're right to point to that gap that I would have liked a single, talking head with one of the men, had they been willing or able to. Look, we don't know. Maybe the director, Lucy Jordan, asked, and maybe none of them wanted to be on camera. And, you know, we have to respect that.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it may also be like kind of a pride thing. Like, I don't want to talk about this because it is so, like, you know,
it's messed up.
Yeah, the feeling you get is one of, not that you should have any shame or pride bruising for this, but maybe that is a feeling that you get.
Yeah.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So like Jason pointed out, Jacoba, when she put in her 23andMe, she had 7 half-siblings. And this is just the beginning. So they're like, okay, that's weird. They're just like, okay, well, we were told that you're only supposed to use the sperm 3 times. So let's see if we can try and figure it out. They went into this just trying to see, like, okay, well, let's see if we can find the donor. They did not go into this expecting that they would uncover that the doctor himself was the one inseminating them. And they actually did like a lot of digging. Like they took 23andMe, they built some family trees, they reached out, they found a lady who was like a first cousin or something like that. They asked her all the surnames that run in her family, and it wasn't until they hit on Dr. Klein's mother's maiden name that they then realized, like, holy crap, Dr. Klein could be our father. And that was the only kind of connection that they had, because he didn't have a DNA on file. His kids did not have their DNA on file, which is a big thing. So Jacoba,
you gotta imagine, like, you know, in the Klein household, the Klein kids are like, hey, that's pretty neat. I think I should probably do it. Like, the dad's like, no, don't do that.
It's the work of the devil.
I got a 23andMe kit ish. I should have gotten the mail. Do you see it? Like, nope. As he's like sliding down on the couch, like nope, haven't seen it. Anyway.
Yep. So Jacoba and the other siblings, again, I think some of them are used in these reenactments, some of them aren't, but they're basically trying to get answers. And Klein's family keeps giving them the runaround. Some of his children try to talk to her, and they're like, it's okay. He just said that he did it sometimes. They finally were able to get to talk to him. Like, 6 of them were able to get to talk to him. He came in there. He had a gun. He was
with
all
a gun.
Scary. Yeah.
With a gun.
Interviewing them.
I don't want to say.
Sorry, go ahead, Jason.
I don't want to say that I enjoy the running gag of the documentary where he's like, well, it's only going to be 10. Okay, that's it. And then as you get further, like, yeah, okay, it's only going to be 15. Oh, at max, 15. A little further down, it may be around 30 or so. I don't know. It's probably right. And then we get to a point where it's like, well, I don't even know how many I did at this point. I have no idea. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
That by the end of the documentary, 96 and counting. So, you know, not everybody does 23andMe. But I think if you, particularly those who believe them to be their parental father's child, you're less likely to do 23andMe. The ones mm-hmm. who believe themselves to be from sperm donors are more likely to to do it. But I mean, some people do it out of interest. They're not looking to challenge the paternity of their father. They're just thinking, oh, how interesting about this family tree. What I love here about Jacoba is this, the citizen sleuth, and that's something that Mari and I like very much, and we look for properties that have that aspect to it. I mean, this is the quintessential citizen sleuth who gets one idea, one case, and dedicates an enormous amount of their life to it. And while she, you would think, is bringing bad news to people, she's not bringing the bad news to them. The other siblings, as they start to get their results back and are seeing 50 hits, 60 hits, 70 hits, 80 hits, where you'd expect apparently 15 to 17, something like that, she contacts them because, of course, they come up on her screen, and she says, when you want to talk, here I am. So there's this small coterie of the ones, particularly seems like the ones that found out early, who've had a longer time to process it, who make themselves available to the later discoveries to help them. And I found that a very moving part of the documentary. Part of Jacoba's mission is to support the new Klein kids, as she said. She said, you look at them and you go, oh, yeah, that's a Klein boy. Yep, that's a Klein girl. Because it also has to be said, they're in a very small town. Dr. Klein is still alive. He's 80, and he lives within 2 miles of many, many of these children and their parents.
I think if I'm a Klein kid and I discover this is happening, I'm like, you know, I don't really want to take the chance. I think I'm just going to move out of town.
Right.
Like, you know, this
really far.
And that's how devastating this can be to your life. Is, you know, it may cause somebody to be like, I can't live in this town, where I may date a relative and end up with, you know, possibly genetically deformed children if I have babies with this person. That's how devastating this can be to your life. And I did, you know, like you said, Sarah, like Jacoba kind of takes this charge and is like, I'm going to be like the quote unquote, like, I guess you call it a welcome wagon to the to the Klein clan, if you will. Not to bring up any other
please do bring it up, because has an aspect
See this as a very timely documentary to come out now, which is unfortunately timely, where we have in the news you know, after the slaughter in Buffalo, where we have these conservative you know, wing of the country talking about the great replacement theory, where this is, we find out a little later in the documentary that that could have had something to do with why he's doing what he's doing, which I found just insanely, like, you pair the whole conversation about women's rights surrounding you know, birth, and surrounding women's choices in how they give birth, and, you know, who they are giving birth to,
and whether they give birth.
Exactly. Is an insanely an unfortunately timely topic
conversation. Yeah, because, like, so Jacoba reaches out. She's trying to get this out, but again, there's still not the DNA from Dr. Klein. So she did hook up with a reporter named Angela Canote. They initially run the story, but they can't talk about Dr. Klein himself. And when they meet with Dr. Klein, Dr. Klein basically begs Jacoba not to go public with the conversation. And she's like, no, thank you. I can do whatever I want to. You know, basically she's the welcome wagon, because she saw 7 hits and was confused. Now that you have those 7 hits, then you have like the 30 siblings. But then, you know, if those 30 siblings have, you know, their DNA, people from their households DNA tested, then that's why when we get to the end, I got to get Jason. To my notes. Jason, yeah. Jason had 3,000 hits on his DNA, because it's not only, you don't just get your half sibling hits, you get their family's hits as well sometimes, you know? So what Jacoba was doing was just great. And I agree, like a 25-mile radius, I think was what Jacoba said.
Yeah.
For the new siblings, that is so tight. And they talk about how the alerts themselves feel like a threat. You know what I'm saying? Like the alerts themselves have them on edge. And I love that running joke of, oh, it's only 10. And then they would go to a black screen. The sibling number would tick up. Yeah. And each time, like Jason said, I was like, bruh, like what is happening? Yeah. There's so many of them.
Imagine you're a young person. You're out at the bar. You have this information now. You're out at the bar. Hey girl, you're really nice. I'd like to date you. But real quick, before we go out, could you just do 23andMe? It's a long story, but would you please test yourself genetically before I can even date you?
I feel like 23andMe kind of turns into like a dating like app. Like, okay, let me see all these other people that I'm not related to, and I know that they're safe. So let me see if I can pick them up and maybe date them. It's like, you know, and we talk about like when your abusers are part of your community. Like, can you imagine after finding out about this and then you run into Klein, you know, at the grocery store, like especially if you are one of the patients that saw Klein,
it's got to be fathers. My gosh,
you're right. It'd be awesome. You know what I mean? Like if this was any other neighborhood in any other state, in certain areas, it'd be on site.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Jacoba and the siblings, they want to go public, but then they start getting threats and weird occurrences, like their lug nuts are gone off their cars. They're getting like the coroner is calling them, which was a lot. But let's get into it. Let's discuss what Jason brought up here. Let's get into Dr. Klein's religion and the supposed maybe link to Quiverful. So in 1963, we get this like montage. Klein is like driving in his car in this neighborhood. They have him like changing the radio, but he runs over a 4-year-old girl who's on her bike. That reenactment, oh my God, it like was devastating to me. Like, it was so like, and none of these reenactments are graphic. Like, they're not graphic at all, really, but they're just shot in such a really like, it was so good.
The screams coming from the little girl, like, oh my God.
And
like,
the screams of the mother. It was the screams and the sobbing of the off-screen mother. These are beautiful, beautiful, slightly the wrong word. They're very effective. Yeah. So I don't need to see a mangled 4-year-old girl, but if you show me blood and I hear a woman screaming from her very soul, screaming and sobbing, I get it. So, you know, really well done.
Ooh, yes. And so because of this, they speculate, because again, most of this is speculation, because Klein himself has not technically been on the record as to why he's done this. Like, technically, Jacoba we get recordings from him because she records whenever she's talking to him, but it's mostly just kind of like Bible verse here, Bible verse there, and I only did it for certain people. Like, he really does not come out and say it. So they're again researching. So they find out he kills a little girl. He wants to atone for that, so he turns to religion. His office is littered with religious texts, and one religious text that keeps on coming up is Jeremiah 1:5, which he keeps spouting at them as if that is his reasoning. But I mean, Jeremiah 1:5 goes, "Before I formed you in your mother's womb, I knew you." And I'm going to ask you guys what you guys got from this, but let me just say, to me, that sounds like a man who's trying to play God.
Yeah. I mean, Klein obviously has a severe God complex.
Yeah.
Because you have to think, going into his mindset, even with these cases where he knows that the father is trying to provide the sample, maybe he's looking at himself like, you know what? I'm better than this guy. Right. This should be this offspring would benefit more from my genes and this person's genes, because I am superior to this person in every way. And we talk about the Bible verses of it all. You know, reason number 500 why I like Jacoba is like when they have the meeting with the siblings and he's like spouting this at her. She's like, oh, whoa, 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 buddy, don't go using my God to justify your nonsense. Like, yes. I felt like it was almost like a holy war. It's like, no, that's my God, not your God. Like, don't get your hands off my God. Stop using my God's words for your misdeeds. So that was a very powerful segment there where she's like, don't do that. Like, they're getting ready to fight over religion in this very, like, the reenactment was very tense and weird. I can only imagine what the actual event was like.
Yeah.
And, you know, they describe him as coming in and he's cold. He's emotionless. He's writing down everyone's profession and what they do to, like, judge them to, like, who is the best of these people that I created, which just shows you the psychopathy of this person and what he's thinking and feeling. And he's obviously not well. But yeah, that was a fascinating aspect of it. And for him to be like throwing all this gossip out there is just should tell you a lot about the people that you see in society that are like that. Like, don't like delve a little deeper. Don't fall for that exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine, he was lauded for a reason. You know, people who couldn't have children would go to him. He was a fertility specialist. As Murray said, right at the beginning of this kind of idea of artificial insemination, we're going to get in vitro, we're going to get all sorts of things to come. But people who couldn't have babies come to him and they have a baby. This, say he started with pure motives, this is going to be a very powerful aphrodisiac, and I use that word, you know, deliberately, to his ego of I can create. So where's the line where you step over and say, I've tried five times with the husband with the low motility and nothing's happened. What if I just put a little bit of my sauce in there and we'll see what happens? The only thing that he said is that he was trying to help, quote, unquote. But here's slightly where, we'll get to our recommendations later and I'll talk more about my reservations about this documentary. I think listeners can tell that we are generally, you know, quite positive towards it. But there was never much of a delving, very hard to delve when the person won't go on record. But right. Lucy Jordan really sticks with Jacoba's investigation and Angela, the reporter's investigation, and doesn't do much digging outside of that. So the Quiverful movement is mentioned, something I'd never heard of till a couple of months ago, and now it's everywhere I see. It's not a religion, it's a movement, it's a Christian movement, which aims to have as many children as possible as ambassadors for God. Women are completely subjugated. It's a patriarchal movement, and it is so repulsive but we can't just recoil from it. I mean, unfortunately, we have to engage with it because these people are in our parliaments, in positions of power. Klein is still an elder of the church and very supported by his church community. I'm atheist, but I understand the power and the goodness of a church, of any religion, can have in community. These people, as you say, are in our communities. So we can't just say, oh, that's terrible, and resolve from it. We actually have to engage with it. The Klein kids, for the most part, they're all white, and for the most part, they are blonde with blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And so the Quiverful movement, they've said, like Sarah said, they want you to go out and be in politics. They want you to gain some power so that they can, from what the documentary suggests here, is so that they could turn civil law into the Bible. And the reason why Jason said this is very apt, it's because this movement is rooted in white supremacy, and it follows the white supremacy talking points that we just seen with the unfortunate timing of the Buffalo mass shooting and the perpetrator of that. It is one of those ones where they want to produce more of the right white race so it does not disappear, so they don't become the minority. And Jacoba pointed out that the wall of babies in Dr. Klein's office are all white. They're all white babies. Like Sarah said, they're all blonde hair and blue eyes. Like Indiana is it's pretty diverse in some areas. So it's very interesting that, you know, I'm pretty sure there are other couples that can go and want fertility, but he seems to specialize in blonde hair, blue eyes, you know?
I did wonder like if he ever like turned away you know, people that weren't up to his standard, if you will.
Yes, I wonder that as well.
But I mean, the
maybe that's where the medical students come in, or the husband's sperm. I mean, we don't know that it was every single patient that he used his own sperm on. Although, you know, it was 1979 to 1986. It's a lot of kids. Perhaps his charges were, you know, priced people out of the market. We don't know. And again, that's not discussed at all.
Right. And I think, was it Julie who said, it was one of the siblings that said, oh no, it was Jacoba. Sorry. She said, was he a racist bigot that used our moms as pawns in this quiverful movement? So this is like, they give us this section to make us ponder his motives. Like we said, we don't know for sure, but I mean, it looks,
yeah, I mean, there's no direct link. Like the way they got into the Quiverful thing was that Jacoba was looking up the people from the state's attorney's office, and she found one of their email addresses was a Quiverful email address.
Yes.
And it's like, and then they talk about the fact that Jeremiah 1:5 scripture is a scripture that they quote quite often. So I think that's the link that we're supposed to get, that it kind of insinuates that he may have been part of that movement, but there's no like direct link to it. But I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance that was, you know, as part of it, but we can only speculate on that.
Well, yeah. I mean, even if it's not directly Quiverful, the white supremacy agenda is pretty stark, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, even if it's not about him, even if it's not about him trying to further, quote unquote, further the white race, it's just about him feeling superior to other people. If we just kind of quantify it down to just him, it's just like, I'm superior than all these other people that want these babies. I'm helping these mothers by giving them my superior genes, which you find out are actually they were actually inferior, which was I'd like to be in a room when he found that out. Like, wait a minute, what? My genes are not great for them. I would have been like rejected if I had applied to be a donor nowadays.
Yeah. Many of the siblings share autoimmune issues and have a very similar medical issues, which are, you know, which impact their lives very strongly. And this comes from, you know, Klein's sperm. So not so superior after all.
Right. Before we jump into that, because the documentary does a doozy and ends on that, the legal ramifications, right? So again, like we were saying, Jacoba filed a complaint with the state attorney general's office. She filed that pretty early on when they had first figured out what was happening. And basically the prosecutor's office was kind of just like, there's nothing we could charge him with. And this was a kind of a heartbreaking segment here, because like they were saying, like sexual assault needs force and non-consent in some of their laws. Like, so this is where we came back to the mothers, the actual patients, where they were like crying and they're all saying like, I would not have given my consent for him to use his sperm. Not at all. Like, I feel like he never gave me a choice. This was very powerful. They basically went back to back, like, talking to each one of the mothers themselves, and they couldn't get him on anything for rape or Sarah said, assault, like battery with bodily fluid. They said he couldn't even get him on that, because technically they signed a consent paperwork to have donors, you know, to be inseminated with donor semen. But yeah, so what we ended up getting, what they originally he sent a letter to the attorney general's office saying that he had never used his DNA to inseminate his patients, when it's like, dude, like, what? It was right here. There's all these DNA matches. Like, what? So because of that, they got him with like filing a false document. And because they were able to get a warrant out on that, they then got a warrant for his DNA to finally confirm that for Jacoba, he has a 99.9997% chance that he is her father. And because of this, he was then charged with two counts of obstruction of justice. So again, everything that he is being charged with is against the state. It's not even against the victims themselves. And he is basically charged with lying to the state. And he pled guilty, and many think it's because he wanted to avoid a trial, he wanted to avoid a stiffer punishment, and he more importantly wanted to avoid any of the rest of that coming out. And then come to find out he has friends in the prosecutor's office. The judge herself basically was like, even though Jacoba and a lot of the siblings gave victim impact stories, the mothers gave victim impact stories, the judge was like, well, I can only consider the charge that are being brought against him today, and that's only against the state. And she just basically gave him a fine and a suspended sentence. I don't know.
$500.
There it is. $500.
$500.
The courtroom scenes were quite like rage inducing, because it's just like, you know, first it's like, you know, Jacoba, reason number 612, why we have Jacoba, is like, she gets up there and she's like, all right, F what they told me to say, I'm going to tell my story, and hopefully, like, the judge will see past the, you know, the technicality of it all, and charge him with what he's done, because he's, like, violated all these people. But, I mean, as Donald Glover said, you know, this is America.
Yep.
Like, people in certain, you know, tiers of our society get away with things. He had these like letters of you know, what do you ever call it, affirmation from all these people that are he's a good man, he's a great member of the church and of society. And then you have the judge talking about like, just remember, no matter what happens here today, the people that love you will still love you, as she's talking to Klein, where it's just like, what, like, why are you like,
sorry for finding you $500.
It's you know, he gets,
I have to, because you lied.
Sorry,
you lied to the state. Yeah.
Like, there's just this evidence staring me in the face. I have to charge you as a felon, but I'm so sorry. And it'll just be $500. You want me to pay it for you? I can pay it for you. I was basically right more than that. And to be those people sitting in that courtroom who this man has violated, and for the, you know, judicial system of America to say like, okay, I know this man violated you, I know this should be a common sense thing, where we say this was wrong, he should go to jail for a long time. But oh wait, he lied to us, so that's what we're going to get him on. Not that he violated you, but he lied to us, the government. Like, it's just, it's like, makes your mind like explode. We're just like, why is this happening? Like, you know,
we did have a very interesting legal expert, Jodie Madeira from Indiana University. And one of her points was, look, you could, there are, you know, laws on the books that you could, you know, make a case against him for the victims. But she talked very fatalistically about, it's not going to be brought. It's just not going to be brought by the courts, and a jury will not be convicting. And that's enraging too, that you could even say, well, look, here's the law that he broke when he violated his victims. And for legal experts to go, yeah, but like, it's not actually going to get to court. And if it does, there'll be no conviction. So as we mentioned before, in 2018, there's a fertility fraud bill that's been signed into law. And this was brought by Liz White, who we've mentioned before. Liz, one of the women, very powerful speaker on her own behalf, and her son Matt. So they started it, and the bill ensures, I'm just going to read it here, any misrepresentation in a medical procedure is considered a felony. So this is really powerful and broad enough that you can bring all sorts of things under that. So at the end, we do find out that Klein's not the only one. There are 44 other fertility doctors who've been discovered to have done the same thing. Klein gets the crown for being the most prolific, but
so far.
Yeah, and then talking about like the I guess the legal procedure of it all. Like, we meet like the probably one of the people interviewed, one of the most douchey people in the documentary, which was Tim Delaney, which is like a former prosecutor. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, these women came to me and they wanted me to basically like, you know, be like on their side, but I wouldn't have that. Like, I can't put this on paper because this is not nothing. No, there was no legal crime that happened here. Like, that's why, you know, they want me to codify them and be like, oh, you know, sympathetic toward them. But no way. That's why this guy was the worst.
Yeah, he was. He truly, truly was. He and that's the type of attitude that prosecutors go into with cases like this, where they don't see the true victim. And it's very annoying. And I like Matt White, like, shout out to him, because he was another one of the siblings who talked. And he that man looked like he was filled with quiet rage. Like, I was like, I would never want to be on Matt White's bad side. And he looked the most like Klein. Like,
yeah, he did.
All the kids that we saw.
We didn't need no DNA test. Like, we know. We can see it. My guy. Like, you are that guy.
He looked just like him. I felt so, so bad for him. But I like him and Liz. Liz was the one who talked about she felt like she was being raped. And they were so just so powerful, seeing the just directly from the people's mouth. So let's get into these genetic disorders, man. So after the legal portion, the sibling count is still going up, y'all.
Tick 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 tick. And the worst part of it is every time they do that, you hear in the background this moaning. Which is supposed to be Klein giving his
unnecessary. Yeah. I give them a big black mark for that. I did not need that. Where I fully approve of the reenactment at the beginning with the tie over the shoulder of the masturbation. I thought, yes, please don't give me ecstatic moans as the count goes up.
Ugh. Oh man, so good, so good. I love that counter. That every time I was like, oh Lord, like me and my
here we go. Oh, yeah. And it goes. Like,
yes, exactly. You know,
there's max 15. Click, 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 17. Like, oh
no, man. No more than 25.
Click, 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 29.
Me and my husband would just like, oh come on. Like every single time. It was so, so funny. But so most of the siblings have genetic disorders and health issues. Like, some of the issues that they can't even identify. Jacoba herself says, like, she had been like in and out of hospitals, like they don't know what's happening. And I think we got Jason, him as well. He was saying he got endoscopies, colonoscopies, like all of these things, and he doesn't know what's wrong with him. And they think it's mostly autoimmune diseases. One of the siblings, I don't think I caught her name. She was sibling number I want to say it was like 30 something or 50 something. She had a blood disorder, autoimmune blood disorder, that actually led to her having a miscarriage. And she didn't realize it until she had the miscarriage. And then they were able to find the blood disorder. But
I think that's Carrie Foster, number 53.
Thank you. Carrie Foster, number 53. Exactly. And I think Julie said she's had digestive and colon issues as well that are not on her mother's side. So what it is here. So Klein is well known for having rheumatoid arthritis. We get the Farbers talking about how he had rheumatoid arthritis so much that they thought that his ability was in jeopardy. I think he even might have switched from being like a surgeon because of the rheumatoid arthritis. And I hope most people know rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease itself. And rheumatoid arthritis is a genetic and can be passed down genetically. But not only can it be passed down to you genetically as rheumatoid arthritis, it can manifest in that next generation as any type of autoimmune disease, like not necessarily just RA. So, and there are a plethora of different autoimmune diseases out there that the siblings will probably just go their whole lives trying to get a correct diagnosis, because unlike House and all of and Grey's Anatomy, sometimes it takes more than an hour to figure out really, really difficult diagnosis. Yeah.
Mari with the science.
But it's, I don't know what doctor you're going to, Mari, but my doctor diagnosed me with everything.
Good for you and your good genes.
I mean, then they have to question their own decisions to have children as well.
Exactly.
Do they want to pass? Do they want to pass that on? And this is something that he knew. This is very interesting too. A sibling 61, Alison Farber, who is the daughter of the friends and colleagues of Dr. Klein. And there's a really harrowing photograph of her as a baby being held in Dr. Klein's arms. And yeah. He knows, but no one else knows.
Can you imagine the like devious mind just be sitting there like, yeah, you guys think that you...
I did
like,
that, yeah.
Yeah, this is me. And so
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, let's set this up because at this point in the documentary, guys, I'm just like, okay, we've got the legal aspect of it. We've got most of the victims. Now we're up to sibling 61. At this point, I'm just thinking, okay, so we're just adding another sibling here. Like, I'm like, surely there can't be anything else.
There can't be something else that makes my jaw drop to the floor.
Exactly. There can't be anything else for this. But as we said, Dr. Klein has had autoimmune diseases. If he were to try and be a donor, he would not qualify because of his family history. But Alison Farber, both her and her daughter were having they had genetic disorders that they were trying to identify, and they used 23andMe to try and see if they could if it can give them insight on what their genetic disorders was. But when she put in the 23andMe, she popped up with all these half siblings. And she's like, whoa, this can't be right, because I am a product of my mother and my father. And I had no idea that they even, you know, there was any type of fertility issues, except for maybe that they went and took some fertility pills. So Jacoba does Jacoba's thing. She's like, hey, girl, hey.
What's up, girl? Welcome to the fam.
Yeah. Exactly. I can give you some insight. And Allison was like, yeah, I just ignored it.
Like, I feel like that's something that I would have done. Like, if someone in the contact me like, okay, this must have obviously been an error. Like, maybe you're a third cousin, three times removed, whatever, no biggie. Because she said that she saw them in the close family, that it wasn't like, she didn't understand that they meant that these were her half-siblings. That at first she thought it was just her like third cousin removed or whatever. But then she saw a doctor. So I'm glad I walked into this not knowing about this case. And you number did. Like 812 reason why I'm glad I don't watch Dr. Phil, because it didn't spoil me on this case. But yeah, she saw Dr. Phil and saw Jacoba and the other people that were listed there as, you know, having this issue with Dr. Klein. She's like, oh crap. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know him. Oh crap. Yeah. I know him. He is a family friend.
Yes, he is a family friend of the Farbers who have been in this documentary since like the midway point. And we were thinking they're a character witness for him. She then calls her mom. She's like, hey, you know, I just got a hit about like Dr. Klein, you know, and all this. And that's when the mother and the father come to terms that they had went to Dr. Klein for fertility issues, but they were told that it was the husband's sperm. They did not know that Klein had used his sperm to inseminate Alison Farber's mom. And Alison Farber's mom here, again, she was like, the amount of emotions I went through my head, like I couldn't believe it. And I was angry, but how could I be angry? Because they ended up having twins, like Alison had a twin sister. And she's like, and my girls are my favorite thing about her. So how can I really be mad? And the husband, again, like Sarah said, he was just sitting there like he looked like he was about to say something.
I'm mad.
Exactly. But then he didn't. And he was just like, I just didn't. She had mixed emotions. And so we get the pictures of Jacoba and Dr. Klein and him being a close family friend.
Allison.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I said Jacoba again. Sorry.
Okay. Allison. We love Queen Jacoba. She's Jacoba. Everywhere.
Exactly. So we get the pictures of Allison and Dr. Klein, and we know that they, like, she's basically grown up there. And then what we find out is that Dr. Klein was Allison's fertility doctor, and that for 2 years at the very least he did all of her paps, he did her breast exams, knowing full well that he was her father.
So it wasn't made clear, like, if she had to get a donor sample or have her husband's sample to have her kids.
Yeah.
Like that I wasn't don't, made clear.
I don't think
yeah,
I know.
I don't yeah, think I, she yeah. Uh-huh.
He was just
you think he at least didn't cross that line, right?
Right. Yes. I think her kids were fine. I think he was just sounded like he was just kind of like her gynecologist. It didn't seem like she had
well, she did say had, fertility doctor.
So she I was did like, say that.
Mm-hmm. Like I don't know. So and just to touch on the like surprise.
Please touch that touch.
Yeah.
just to reference the surprise of it all. I guess I like because they flashed her full name on the screen when she came on. I guess at that point I should have realized, but I didn't. I just kind of went past it. And then when like she's talking about it, like oh yeah, it's another victim of Dr. Klein's. And then when like. And then as she's talking about it and the, was it Shireen and Mark pop on the screen? I'm like, oh, wait, like that's, those yeah. are her parents? Like yeah. just the shock and awe of that, like to my assistant, like, oh my gosh, like this goes so much further, even out of bounds. Like your buddy has now like betrayed you and done this to you. And mm-hmm. just to feel like what they must have gone through. Realizing slowly, like as they hear about this through the news or whatever, like but he didn't do that to us, right? Like that's not like, but he wouldn't like he wouldn't do that to his friends, and then for them to be like, oh no, he did do that to his friends, like he did that to us, has to be like a complex range of emotions.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, it's another big week on RHAP. The Challenge All-Stars 4 just kicked off. Allie and Brian are back and on video for the first time ever. Check out their full coverage of Challenge All-Stars 4. And I thought it was the best episode of Survivor of the season. Episode several. Don't miss all of our podcasts. And can I brag about our patrons on our feedback show? Every week, I talk to the patrons on Friday afternoon. We've had such great strategic, interesting conversations. If you haven't listened in yet, check it out. robisawebsite.com/patron right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
And Sarah, do you think also this was the woman who he had asked her, like, are you Jewish? And she was like, yeah. And she told him that she did not appreciate his office having all of the Christian symbols in it. Do you think that in itself is also another insidious aspect to this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's the bouquet of insidiousness is extraordinary. I mean, the fact that he asked, the fact that they were sort of family friends when he was so dismissive of her and her speciality. She's a PhD in child rearing and child development, and he felt he knew more than her. I think definitely one of the things about it's just hard to even say, the replacement theory is obviously you would want to replace a Jewish baby with at least a half Christian baby if we are I can't speak on behalf of my gender, but on behalf of the white people, do so much better, everybody, including me. We can't just not be racist. We have to be anti-racist and speak up when you can and to be an ally, even if there are only white people in the room. That's one of the things I can to give you for free. Yes, I definitely think that he wouldn't necessarily have done it specifically because Shireen was Jewish, but certainly it would have fitted in with his my sperm is superior. Although he doesn't think of these people as his children.
Yeah, he actually said that. Like, I don't think of these people as my children, which is just chilling. Like when you hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Awful.
So, and that's it. That is our father. I mean,
wow. Listen, if you need a story about heroic women, like, this is where you come to. Like, this was a story full of heroic women. You know, you have, we didn't speak a lot about her, but Angela Genote, who was the reporter that that really stepped up and really brought this into the public light. You know, she's one of the heroes here. You have Jacoba, who's one of the heroes. So you have the victims.
Julie.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Julie, who are like one of the heroes here. Like, this is mostly a story about heroic women stepping up and doing what needed to be done to bring this guy to at least the little bit of just the tiny, like, infinitesimal amount of justice that this man got, which was not near enough. But to even get it to that level was because of Jacoba, because of Angela, and the things that they did to bring this to light.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, we've joked slightly, but obviously we take this very seriously. These are real people, and an incredible injustice has been done to them, and the inhumanity of it cannot be overstated. So we very much know that, but we just would like to talk about it in an entertaining way, partly because it's very hard to sit with the issues that that this brings up.
Right, exactly. And Sarah, I see you wanted to bring up a further property, correct?
Yeah.
Before we got into the rating.
Yeah, so prior to this, Lucy Jourdain did a series, Taken at Birth. It is on TLC. It's a very disturbing story of the Hicks babies. I'd never heard of the Hicks babies. The name was given to, they think, more than 200 newborn babies who were illegally sold out the back door of a clinic in small town Georgia during the 50s and 60s. And they're called Hicks babies because the man who did this was Dr. Hicks. Again, we have a citizen sleuth. Again, we have a heroic woman, Jane Blasio. She says, "I am a black market baby." She's been investigating this for 30 years or so. She brings in reporters Chris Jacobs and Lisa Joyner. Hicks is long dead, but there's exhumations, there's meetings, there's all sorts of things. They think that one of the things that Hicks did was women would come to him for abortions. He would persuade them not to have abortions. He would persuade them to have the baby, and then he would sell them for $1,000 out the back of the clinic. He was also inducing labor early. A lot of these Hicks babies were small. He was inducing labor early and telling the mothers that the baby had died, selling them out the back of the door. And one woman who gave birth and was told that her baby had died, she remembers hearing the baby crying, and they told her that that was just a dream. So it's an interesting that it seems like this director's interest lies in, you know, bodily autonomy, fertility, the patriarchy, money, doctors playing God. In style, it's Our Father is a great step forward stylistically. Taken at Birth is very interesting to watch for the story, but it's told very hectically. And at the end of every section for an ad, we're told what we're about to see. We come back from the ad, we're told what we just saw and what we're about to see. So there's this continual rotation of information. It's very hectic. It's very sensational in a way that Our Father isn't. I have criticisms of Our Father, which we'll get to for our ratings. I'm not going to recommend seeing Taken at Birth, but I don't not recommend it. I mean, it's an extraordinary story. And again, we get the citizen sleuth. Again, we get the person with the dogged determination to solve a single crime. And it's very interesting for this director to look at what her themes are that she's exploring. And I expect the next thing that she makes, while it may be different, will have that similar DNA, if I may, of, you know, the writing of humanitarian crimes, gross crimes, and the strength of individual people, and in both these cases, mostly the women. Although it must be said in Our Father that the two male Hicks, Klein kids that we see, Jason and
Matt
are very interesting men. So yes, you can find that it's
on Hulu.
TLC on Hulu. Yes, That's mm-hmm. right. And you can potter around doing your dusting and your dishes while you're watching it.
Yes. And if we're going to continue on not recommendations here, which I think is the perfect spot for it. Like I said, I watched Baby God on HBO Max. It deals with the same thing. I watched it and I thought it gave a lot more background on Klein in a sense, because it gave more background on how fertility was, like how they did fertility in the early days even more. So I liked it for the background, but it is very slow. It's like traditional documentary style. So you feel like the camera is riding along with another woman. She's like the main character who's like tracking down the siblings and stuff like that. But for some reason, it's just not as flashy as Our Father. But it has the same central story. Like the siblings find out that they a fertility doctor is their sperm donor, and they didn't know. But for them, it's easier because when they put their DNA in the 23andMe or whatever, all of his kids' DNA was in there. There was like six of his kids' DNA in there. So they just kept seeing the name Fortier. They're like, who is this? And so if you want more of this type of thing, if you want more about like fertility doctors being dicks, go and watch Baby God.
Also dicks.
Yeah. Oh, dang. Wait, right. That might not have been the best. Being very bad people. Yeah. Go and watch that on HBO Max. But let's get into the ratings for this property, for Our Father. Jason, how would you rate Our Father out of 5 magnifying glasses? 5 being the best, 1 being,
not. I'm going to give it 3.5.
Okay.
Crack off the handle to one of the magnifying glasses.
Yeah,
we'll give that the half. So I took a half off for like, we don't get much of the Klein perspective. I understand why we didn't, mm-hmm. but we didn't get much of the perspective from either him or maybe his family members that were involved. Mm-hmm. Taking another half off for some of these reenactments. So when we're talking about Jacoba, and Jacoba was such a sport going through all the reenactments, I think
she really
like,
was. Yeah,
there's this moment where it's like she's in this red hoodie, we see her from the back, and the papers are just staple all over her wall, and we get
the serial killer wall. It's a serial killer wall.
We get the voice over her at one moment where it's like, it's not like I'm crazy or anything. As we see this wall of papers, and she's like obviously like looking like the crazy like conspiracy theorist person, and some of the other things, like she's walking in her quote down unquote in her town, and she's like mm-hmm. seeing her siblings, like anyone could be my son. Those were a little cheesy and corny for me. And then my last half off will be from just, I felt like I like my true concept to be like a whodunit, like a howdunit. Mm-hmm. I feel like very early on we're like, this is the guy that did it. He's a bad guy. Let me just tell you now why he's such a bad guy. I prefer my true crime to be like, I want to have some solving of my own to be doing, like, I wonder how that happened or why that happened. But we kind of got spoiled in the first like minute of it, like this guy did this and like this is how, not necessarily the why, but yeah. So those are my 1.5 reasons why I gave it 3.5 magnifying glasses.
Okay, awesome. Sarah, let's go with you next. What are your magnifying glasses?
Well, I'm going to give it a 3. I really liked this documentary. I liked watching it. I'm very grateful to those people for being so honest and showing their lives. I will ding it for a few things like Jason. I mean, her in the red hoodie with the serial killer wall is unforgivable. It's a great image, but it's just not right, and I feel it does her a disservice. I feel that she did what the director asked her to do because like her giving evidence at the trial about Dr. Klein lying, she wants to get it out there, and I do appreciate it. But that I found the reenactment of Dr. Klein coming to the table with the gun and the 7 siblings, and some of them are real siblings and some of them are actors and he's an actor. I thought, I can imagine somebody walking into a place with a table. Like, I don't. Yeah. And it's a shame because some of the reenactments, particularly the going down the hallways of the clinic, the woman waiting with the legs in the stirrups, that's a very vulnerable position. I appreciated all of those. So the more atmospheric, let's say, reenactments worked very well, and the this is what happened if we'd had a camera in the place reenactments, I thought were not good. I would have liked more from Jody Madeira, the law professor at Indiana University, because that to me is part of the process. Like, she did briefly give us some comments, but I would have liked more of a survey, historical precedent or whatever it might have been. I would have liked just a little bit more of that meat of why the law could not protect these people or have reparations for these people. That's the wrong word, restitution for these people. So I would have liked a little bit more of that. And I feel like the question about why he did it or who he was as a man, we're like, well, it could have been this, it could have been that, but we don't know, let's move on. Like, I think there was more to explore there. There was an anonymous parishioner who talks about him, but it was touched on so lightly and moved on from, and I thought, this man is at the center. And I would have liked more from that. So I liked most of it, but I did have some quite strong what I felt was lacking and what I felt was there, which shouldn't have been there. So I'm going to give it a 3, but I'm going to say definitely worth your time. How about you, Murray?
Well, I'm going to give it a 4. I was thinking about going higher until I heard some of y'all's thing, because I actually really like this. I actually liked it better on the rewatch too. Like, I think it's because, again, I'm a huge sucker for Blumhouse. So I liked that it was a documentary. I liked the reenactment. I found the Red Hoodie one hilarious. Made no sense. Found it very hilarious.
It just portrayed the seriousness of the subject for me a little bit. I was like, this is a little corny. I don't know if it belongs. It's like, it's some people say, it's like, it's too cute by half. Like, it's a little much.
Yeah, it's a little much. I just like the overall production value of it, because again, after watching this documentary and then going back and watching some other ones, it was like a movie documentary feel to it. Like, you don't get too many of those type of stylistic documentaries where they can almost feel like a movie. And I mean, you're right. You guys are right. They didn't give a lot of background on Klein, but I thought it was kind of interesting that even with a little bit of background, they made him into the big bad. Like the kids were talking about when they saw him in court, how that was the first time they had physically been near him. Like, some of them have physically been near him and they were like crying being near. They successfully made this very old man like very intimidating. Like, oh, he had the gun. The reporter was like, I was so scared. I didn't want to go into the restaurant to meet him because, you know, and then all of the intimidation tactics. I thought they just did a great job of building this man up to be a monster, because, and I feel like it was warranted, because if we don't do it here, it felt like nobody was doing it. The community wasn't doing it. The judge was all sympathetic to him. I did feel like it was important that they got the story across that what he did truly hurt people. And I think that's what I like about this documentary more than anything, is because I feel like I could sympathize with those women every time Liz told her story or Diana told her story, what her husband thought. Like, I think they did such a great job of putting a stamp and a face and actual true victims in this case. So I really like that part. The one thing that I did take off from was it was kind of confusing. I'm glad I watched it a second time, because sometimes they would interview Jacoba, like her hair would go from long to short to like, which was fine, because I was like, Jacoba was very recognizable. So when she changed, I could tell. But some of the other talking heads, when they changed like their appearance, I was confused. I was like, is this another sibling?
That happened with Julie for me.
With Julie, like, so many times.
From wearing something one minute to wearing like this other like big shawl I think she had on.
Yeah.
Like, is that Julie? I'm like, I think that's Julie. But yeah. Like I said, more on the second watch, I was like, yeah, that is Julie. But yeah, then you throw me for a second.
For a look. Yeah.
Like Drag Race, I should say, get your interview outfit.
Yes.
And wear it every time we interview you.
Exactly. That was when Liz was telling her story. They would go back to the one shot of Liz, then there was a shot of her with like her hair down, and then another shot back at the original shot. So that was kind of confusing, and that's what made me take basically a whole point off. But
and also, it must be said that a lot of those kids look very alike. So when there's a different haircut, a different shirt, you think, is this another? Because, I mean, that was one thing when we see Alison looking at the Dr. Phil show with the siblings, and she just looks exactly like them.
Yeah. only 53, Carrie Foster was the only one who had like the dark hair and the, she didn't even have blue eyes. She had dark hair, dark eyes.
Matt was a brunette, I think, right?
Yeah.
But Matt was like undeniable.
Oh yeah.
That face.
Yeah. But yeah. So that's what I liked about it. And I think it's important. I think it's a really important to, documentary watch about body autonomy and stuff like that. And it was entertaining. It entertained me first and foremost. I mean, you know, after the victims and all that, you know, after putting the But I truly liked it. I really did. And I didn't realize, especially until I watched it the second time, like how much I liked it. And like I said, when me and my husband were watching it, we were just like, come on, man. And it was, I liked the story. So those are my ratings. I gave it a 4 out of 5. Let us know. Reach out to us. Let us know what you think, what your ratings are. We'd love to hear from you, but let's get into our recommendations, like what we actually recommend.
Jason, do you have a recommendation for us or for our listeners as well?
Yeah. So like I said, I don't delve much into the true crime aspect of like you guys do, obviously. But I'm a comic book guy, so I had to bring a comic book related item to you.
Ooh,
so there's this writer, one of my favorite comic book writers, Brian Michael Bendis. One of his first forays into like comic related things was a graphic novel entitled Torso, and it tackles the real life case of the Cleveland Torso murderer, where basically this guy killed like 12 people and he would dismember them and leave only the torsos. And the investigator for this case was Elliot Ness. And a group of people, I forgot what they called that group, was the
Untouchables.
Yeah, well, this was the Unknowns. This was a different like group. But yeah, so that tackles that case. I read it a long time ago, and it was one of the first things that Brian Michael Bendis had done. And when he got into the mainstream, I looked into more of his stuff. So that's something I really enjoyed. So that's what I would recommend for you guys to check out. It's a graphic novel. So you can go out to pretty much any comic book store, probably on Amazon. You can find it too. So yeah, that's where you can find that stuff.
Fantastic.
Yes. The very infamous Cleveland Torso murders, which I believe, Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, they're still unsolved, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Let's get a sleuth onto that.
And they killed it. It killed Elliot Ness's career.
Get Jacoba on the case.
Yeah.
Yes. Murray, do you have a recommendation for us this week?
I don't, because I will tack on to one of your recommendations. So how about you?
All right, well, I went down an amusement park rabbit hole documentary this week. I watched the excellent ABC, that's Australian Broadcasting Corporation, three-part documentary. It's called Exposed, The Ghost Train Fire. You can see that on ABC iView on demand in Australia. And elsewhere you can actually see it on Vimeo, because the director of photography has actually put it onto his Vimeo page, so it's very easily found. It's a bit of a sit. It's three parts and each part is 90 minutes. And you think, oh, surely they're stretching it out. No. So people, certainly my age and maybe some younger Australians will remember in 1979 at the amusement park, Luna Park, there was a fire in the ghost train and seven people, six children and an adult died. Mm. And it was immediately ruled an electrical fire. So journalist Kara Meldrum Hanna, a very interesting woman, she investigates, and the revelations, one after another, after another, after another, after another. It's extraordinary. And it's my era. I remember that. We were all shattered and shocked. It goes into corruption of actual police people who I know the names of, which I don't know them. Mr. Sin, if you know who Mr. Sin is, he pops up. I thought, oh my God, there's Mr. Sin. It's very effective in looking at the victim impact. This is 40 years ago, and people shake and cry who were simply there, let alone the parents of the children who died, let alone our kind of avatar in the documentary, who was called the luckiest boy in the world, because he was the fifth of five boys who all went to Luna Park together. Two of them went in one car, went through the doors. Two of them went in the next car, went through the doors. he was in the third car, and by that time people were realizing the place was on fire, and he was pulled bodily out of the carriage. And as he says, he doesn't feel like the luckiest boy in the world. So that's really worth looking at. If you're a procedure nerd like I am, you'll get lots of procedure. If you remember Martin Sharp in The Yellow House, which is my sort of bohemian start in King's Cross, like 200 yards from where I'm sitting right now. And then because I watched that, I watched Class Action Park.
Love it.
So good. I didn't realize Chris Gethard was one of the talking heads. Mm-hmm. I mean, what an amazing narrator. So, yeah, those are my two amusement park recommendations. Mari, do you want to hook onto that?
I have to jump on. Class Action Park is so good. And that's in Jersey. And so my husband's from Jersey, and he tried to see if his mom had remembered this. But Class Action Park is on HBO Max here in the States. But it's about a amusement park in New Jersey called Class Action Park, where it was basically a wild, wild west amusement park. It was like a water park, but also like it had roller coasters, and they build themselves as like build your own adventure style park. It's like, do you want to go on this very dangerous loop slide where you might lose your teeth and some skin? Do you want to throw yourself over a cliff into some disgusting muddy water that bodies are in below your feet? Like it is an insane documentary, and it is so good. Jason, have you heard of this?
I've heard of the documentary, and I do believe that there was a movie. I want to say that Johnny Knoxville was in it, based on that park.
Oh, really?
Positive. But yeah, I have heard of it. Like, even like anecdotally, like I've heard people talk about it on like podcasts about Class Action Park.
Yes.
I think they call it like decapitation park or something, like, because somebody got decapitated or something there.
Yeah. Oh, people died. People drowned. Mm-hmm. People were seriously, it was gobsmacking. And again, the 80s, so the bit of the Wild West, as Murray says. Yes.
Yeah, so I haven't seen it, but I have heard of it.
I think you should watch. I think you'd be like, again, you'd be like, what?
It's available in Australia. I'm sorry, I didn't note down where I watched it, Netflix or maybe Stan or maybe Binge. I've got them all. Just Google around it and you'll find it. It's really worth watching. And again, as always, let us know what you think of any of the properties that we talk about. We're eager to hear your feedback. We're eager to hear suggestions for future episodes. We've already done some episodes suggested by listeners, and we have some coming up. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP. That's Scene SEEN. Or email us at crimescene@gmail.com. We're very happy to receive your 5-star reviews. We've had a couple of nice ones this week. We'll read them next week. You can also subscribe to the podcast. Rob has a podcast.com/crimefeed, F-E-E-D. And it really helps us if you subscribe to the feed, as it lets our lords and masters know that you are watching and enjoying our work. So, Jason, what do you have going on, and where can people find you?
Okay, right now, you can follow me on Twitter at JAYR1085. And at the moment, I am covering Murder for a Site with my co-host, Asia Welch, aka Asia Wealth. You two lovely people have been on the podcast, so you know what a roller coaster ride that show is. We are actually in the this next episode we're going to have is the last episode of the season. We hope they can always surprise us with a bonus episode. So yeah, we're covering that for the next week or so. So jump in. You can listen to the podcast without having watched the show. It's still last, and we love talking about it.
That's what I do.
So over on Postal Recaps, I'm also covering This Is Us with Marissa Garza. We're covering the last couple episodes of the series of This Is Us. We've already done two. There's one left. So listen to us there as we cry ourselves silly about This Is Us as they try and really squeeze all tears out of us. I recently wrapped up Winning Time on Postal Recaps. If you watch that show, if you want to binge that show, go back and check out our coverage with me and Grace Leader. So that's where you can find me. Anything else, you can find me hawking it on my Twitter page.
Yes, I put everything I do on Twitter. So if you want to follow me, I'm at Sarah Carradine. Now, some of you have asked us if we're going to cover Candy, which is a docudrama based on a true crime. We're not going to cover it here, but I am, you know, thanks for asking. I'm doing it over on post-show recaps all this week, one episode a day. And how about you, Mari? Where are you and how can people find you?
Wrestling Rehab Up is back. Yes. Every week, me and Matt Scott will go over the highlights of wrestling, the highlights of the week in wrestling. Again, you don't have to watch wrestling. You can just listen to me and Matt. And even better, you can watch us on YouTube and we'll pull up pictures of just subscribe to us at robhasawebsite.com/wrestlingfeed. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's two, like the number two. And you can follow Matt at Matt Scott GW, where we are doing all of the wrestling tweets and plugs and stuff like that. Of course, we just wrapped up coverage for Atlanta. Me, Chappelle, and LaTanya. Season 3 of Atlanta is over, but you can go and check us out over on Post Show Recaps if you haven't already, and listen to our coverage of Season 3 of Atlanta. What are we covering next, Sarah?
Oh, it's a goodie. It's Keepers of the Ashes, and guest Sasha Joseph is going to join us for that. This covers the Oklahoma Girl Scout murders, which is a notorious murder of three young girls during their first night at sleepaway camp, and Kristen Chenoweth was supposed to go to that camp but was ill and didn't go. So that's the sort of the star brush. But I'm really looking forward to that. All four episodes are going to drop on Hulu on May the 24th. So, again, please watch it and send us your comments and questions.
All right. So thanks to Will from America for our theme music and Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Until next time, case closed.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.